Hi, I'm Bede Hill, and this is The D Word, the show where we talk dementia. Welcome along to D Word 301. Good to have you company. And before we get underway, thanks for such an amazing reaction to D Word 300. And Roy will be back for part two in a couple of weeks' time. On this edition, our focus is the 2025 World Alzheimer's Report, which looks at dementia rehabilitation. And joining me to tell us all about it is Chloe Benoit from Alzheimer's Disease International. Chloe will be joining me right after this from BOGO. Maybe an oldie, but it's still the hits the spot. Staring at the Sky from BOGO, getting us underway. My guest this week is Chloe Benoit from Alzheimer's Disease International. Chloe, it's great to welcome you to the D Word as my guest here from Alzheimer's Disease International. You're the publications manager responsible for preparation of key reports. And one of those, of course, is the World Alzheimer's Report. The 2025 World Alzheimer's Report is out. And the focus of this year's World Alzheimer's Report is rehabilitation. And I suppose to start with, that brings an interesting question, which is, you know, what does rehabilitation mean in terms of a condition that sadly at the moment hasn't got a cure?
Yes. Well, first off, thanks for having me. I think that's a key question, really, because obviously there's a perception of rehabilitation, right? When you break a leg or, you know, have a physical injury. So a lot of people don't really necessarily understand what rehabilitation means for dementia. And it doesn't mean, reversing the all of the effects of the condition. But what it does mean is this care, this personalized care approach that helps people with dementia maintain or rebuild skills that focus on what matters most to them and allows them to remain independent for longer. So that can take a lot of different shapes depending on the person. But the absolute key core components of dementia rehabilitation are that it needs to be person-centered, goal-oriented, and collaborative. What might be a rehabilitation goal for one person, for example, making yourself a cup of tea or being able to go to the newsstand every day to buy your newspaper, or being able to remember the names of the people in your bowling club. Each of these is going to be important for different people, and then the different techniques you might use for people to be able to reach those goals are going to be different.
Yeah,
So it's, yeah.
it's yeah, it's it's a really interesting subject because, as you say, rehabilitation is probably means to most people going back to where you started, which is not the case here. And also the point you bring out is the fact that you've got to know the individual, and I do still feel that we're still possibly the individual is seen through their medical history, and not everything that surrounds it. And in order for rehabilitation to occur, you obviously need to know that whole picture, don't you?
Exactly. And I do think that's perhaps one of the obstacles, but it does really make such a huge difference. And I think the main authors of the report, so Professor Linda Clare from University of Exeter and Professor Yoon-hee Jeon from University of Sydney, really wanted to make that clear in the report that rehabilitation isn't just post-diagnostic care. But it's really about making sure the individual feels seen, and it does require, talking to them about what is important for them, and also involving their whole support network. So, healthcare professionals, but also maybe their informal carers or people in their community who can help them achieve those goals. I think some people might struggle a bit with it because obviously there's the allure of like one size fits all approaches, and also, trying to use medication to address a lot of things. But the human aspect of it is crucial. And I think there's a lot of benefits to rehabilitation in terms of quality of life, not just for the person living with dementia, but the people around them. And there's also some research, for example, that shows rehabilitation could delay going into a nursing home by up to 6 months. But I think one of the key factors to take into account is that rehabilitation helps people to live well and with purpose and dignity. And I think that is often kind of seen as a luxury for people with dementia, right? But it should be seen as a basic right. A lot of people still feel that a diagnosis of dementia diagnosis is kind of the end of the road, and there's nothing to be done afterwards because we still don't have a cure. But what I hope, and I think what ADI hoped to do with this report, was to really instill this sense of hope and agency in a lot of people that there is so much you can do to make sure your life still has meaning, even if you have to adapt things according to your capacity as time goes by.
Yeah, I think, it's almost turning the traditional on its head a little bit because people living with dementia that are friends of mine say that when they went to get their diagnosis, the first thing they got was a list of don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, can't do that. Whereas having read the report, I feel the whole approach is completely opposite. It's can do this, you can still do that, which I think is really important.
Absolutely. And I think perhaps like the attitude with which you approach it does make a huge amount of difference. And One of the really wonderful essays in this report, one of them we had from John and Glenys Petrie, so a man living with dementia and his partner. And John really spoke about how, in the years after his dementia diagnosis, he really fell into a pit of despair. He felt there was nothing he could do. And once they discovered rehabilitation and were able to make it fit for his life, that just turned things around for him. And that his doctors were saying his condition was progressing much more slowly than they would have anticipated. And yeah, a lot of it is adapting your lived environment, or adapting the methods by which you might try to do things. So, for example, for John, he really wanted to keep driving, which caused quite a bit of anxiety for with his partner, but was something that they try to manage, only driving on short distances to places that he was familiar with, until a point where he decided he was going to learn how to ride a bike for the first time in his life, so he could still maintain that freedom of movement while also preserving his safety and everyone's well-being. And I thought that was such a great example of this couple that really decided to dig into this and reclaim it so they could reclaim their life together. And I think it's an empowering message, really, that a lot of that well, I hope a lot of people, if they read this report, can think, maybe I can adapt this to my life, especially since now people are getting diagnosed much younger than they used to. So you actually have, you're not necessarily getting diagnosed at a point where at the later stages of the condition where you might have to be dealing more with palliative care. You might get diagnosed in your 50s and your life is far from over, and there's still so many things that people want to do. And I think, yeah, it's the wrong approach to tell people it's the end of the road and you should just prepare your end of life affairs and just sit there and wait for the end to come. That's a really grim way of seeing things, and rehabilitation is definitely a way to shift that.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Coffee's cold now. The bottles are ready to get thrown now. 7 days a week stuck in this old house. Heaven knows I need a change. And I've been smoking the pack you left behind from I don't know when. Wonder if this pain will get to going. Can't keep losing this waiting game. What if I never fall in our kind of love again? And the happiest I'll be is where I've already been. And when it feels like I'm not ready for the end, it's just me scared of starting over again. can you blame me? The love falling apart will drive anyone crazy. And the life we built took everything, didn't it, baby? Like a house of cards that got knocked down. What if I never fall in our kind of love again? And the happiest I'll be is where I've already been. And when it feels like I'm not ready for the end, it's just me scared of starting over again. Back to square one, like the first day of spring, but the flowers haven't come, and now I'm wondering. What if I never fall in our kind of love again? And the happiest I'll be is where I've already been. And when it feels like I'm not ready for the end, it's just me scared of starting over again. Too scared of starting over again.
Starting over again from William Beckman. The results of the voting for the UK Health Radio Awards are out, and it's congratulations to Beda Berry and Deb Bunt, who received this year's Wendy Mitchell Dementia Support Award for their excellent work in education and raising dementia awareness. They've got a third book coming out soon entitled Badging the Buncher, so watch out for that. You can see all the award winners on the website at www.ukhealthradio.com. Back to my guest now, Chloe Benoit. And I also think, you know, looking at the report and the way it's written, those examples are really strong, because I know in the, you know, the first part of the report, which deals with core components of rehabilitation, one of the case studies is Emily Ong. And we've had Emily on the show, and she is a remarkable person. And a great example of how you, you know, as you've just said, it certainly is no way the end of the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, Emily has been a great friend of ABI for a long time. And I think she's also a great example of like finding what mattered to her and trying to find workarounds for her condition so she could still keep doing the things she loved. And yeah, that's, it's crucial. I think we know that lack of stimuli, you know, lack of social interaction, those are things that affect the risk of developing dementia, but also how rapidly the condition might progress. And so rehabilitation is the way to help counter that. A lot of people feel isolated and sometimes maybe feel a bit too self-conscious because of, you know, forgetting names of people or feeling a bit struggling to find their words, right? And that ends up to them perhaps self-isolating more, which makes the condition worse. And through rehab, I think it's also just making people feel more confident to not shut themselves down.
And I think, you know, a lot of the things, I mean, part two of the report, strategies and methods, and a lot of the stuff is simple. It's not, you know, we're not looking at complicated stuff here. I'll give an example. You know, a friend of mine, Phyllis Fair, who's living with dementia in Canada, she, when I was over there this year, she took me to the Schlegel Institute, and she told me she was working with them. And in just one of the rooms, a really simple example was that they'd redecorated, and she went in and they'd color coordinated everything. So the chairs, same color as the walls, everything, same color as everything. And Phyllis took one look at it and said, "You do realize I can't see that chair because you've color coordinated it. You've got to make things stand out." And that was a really simple but brilliant example of kind of a couple of things. One, it's simple, but two, how people living with dementia can play a massive part in all this.
Absolutely. And I think a big component of it is rethinking the lived environment And ADI actually did a report in 2020 on dementia design, looking at how ways you can change the environment, for example, putting a seat in your bathtub to kind of help people still be able to wash themselves, or clearly, putting red and blue for red and for hot and cold water taps. There's so much that you can do, and occupational therapists are, some of the rehabilitation practitioners who are really good at thinking about how to adapt to live environment. There's also physiotherapists, et cetera, but also so much that you can do with just a whiteboard, just to remind yourself what are your appointments in the day or the week, or what's, say what you're having for lunch, because we know sometimes people with dementia can have a lot of anxiety and maybe ask the same questions over and over. And to have that written somewhere is something that can help alleviate some of those symptoms. So the ideal gold standard of rehabilitation, for example, would be a coordination between rehabilitation specialists, your informal care system, and your GP, care home nurses, et cetera. Like, obviously you can make this incredibly elaborate, but I think we also have to take into account that most people around the world don't necessarily have access to all of these resources, or they're not always signposted towards that. But there's so much that you can do at home as long as you are armed with the right knowledge, with and you don't need all the fanciest gadgets. Sometimes it could just be like having a timer, so you know when to not to let the food burn, or switching to an electric kettle, so you can make yourself tea without necessarily with causing a risk to yourself by having the stove on for too long. But yeah, like, rehabilitation can take like so many different forms, and I think it sounds a bit intimidating to a lot of people, but it can be really simple as well.
Yeah, I think it's that's an important message, particularly for carers who obviously have got a real job on and need things to be simple. I think one of the other interesting things the report brings out is that rehabilitation is commonplace in things like stroke, cardiac failure. And it just draws out to me another example of how dementia is still not treated in the same way as those types of illness.
Absolutely. And I think that, as you probably know better than a lot of people, like, the stigma remains one of the huge, huge barriers to so much dementia care. There's such a huge sense that people living with dementia are, not worth investing in. It's a feature of ageism, ableism, just so many ways. But I think, yes, like I said, like, a sense of dignity and purpose is it should be an inalienable right to all of us. It doesn't matter what condition you are in. And I think at the end of the day, for a lot of informal carers, including some of them who wrote in this report, they really said to be able to provide this quality of life as much as possible to my loved one for as long as I could, to be able to make some changes so that they could stay at home for as long as possible. That is priceless. And I think, yeah, we do need to recognize that for a lot of carers, like, this is it's very hard work. It takes so much time and energy, and they often don't have the resources available to them. And I think also one thing that was mentioned in the report is the importance of having support systems for carers as well throughout the rehab journey, because they shouldn't be seen as one more thing for them to take on without support. But also to be able to see your loved one, be able to have a better quality of life, better sense of purpose. That also helps alleviate some of the perhaps more negative psychological effects, right, of the condition, and helps people not necessarily feel like they've just can't do anything anymore, and often a big source of frustration, which ends up affecting everyone around them. But yeah, it's I think hopefully some carers will see this as perhaps a way that can also help them along the way, if it can help the person maintain their some abilities longer. That's a huge win as well.
She was all alone at 4:30 at an all-night small-town convenience store. And he walked in and locked the door behind him. She ducked down behind the counter. He said, "Get up, I know you're down there. I got a gun, just hold on, I'll find it." He fumbled through the pockets of his faded denim jacket, handed her a note and said, "You'd better do exactly what it says." And she read, "Nobody loved and nobody gets hurt." She looked at him with a nervous grin. She pointed to that word. And he said, "What the hell? I can't spell, but you know what I meant." And she said, "Yeah, but that ain't what you said." She said, "I don't think you want to do this. Sounds to me like there's more to it." "Spare your views on my abusive childhood. 'Cause the last time I saw my old man was in a photograph in our garbage can. He never gave a damn, so tell me why I should. And you don't know the half of all the demons that I battle. You ain't gets hurt." And as he walked away in the pouring rain, she still could hear that word. He said, "What the hell? I can't spell, but you know what I meant." And she said, "Yeah, but that ain't what you said." That ain't what you said.
Susie Boggess, Nobody Loved, Nobody Gets Hurt. We're talking with Chloe Benoit from Alzheimer's Disease International about the 2025 World Alzheimer's Report, which is available to download for free from alzint.org. You know, involving multidisciplinary teams, obviously, is a real challenge, because everybody has to be, you know, singing from the same hymn sheet, looking at the same page. And I can only really, you know, I can talk from UK experience, and, you know, that isn't the case. It's fairly simple at the moment. And everybody's going to need to buy in to rehabilitation. And I guess one way of doing that is an economic argument. It's so, you know, so vital that you can show, and you've already demonstrated it, if you keep people at home, you're saving a lot of money, you know, let alone the psychological factors, etc. So it's really important, isn't it, to kind of demonstrate the fact that this makes really good economic sense as well as everything else.
Yeah, and one thing that we did look at in the report, because from what we knew about rehabilitation and the effects it has on the individual, we thought surely there must be plenty of research on the economic benefits of dementia rehabilitation. And there's a lot of research into the economic benefits of rehabilitation as a whole. But there's actually very little that's done into the economic impact of dementia rehabilitation. And I think this does tie back to what you were saying earlier about persistent stigma on dementia. And we know there's been such a focus in recent years on pharmaceutical treatment for dementia, which is obviously a big part of the picture, right? But I think a lot of the research on these dementia care is often left to the side. And you end up with this sort of catch 22 right now, where dementia rehabilitation remains very limited access in a lot of places. But then you don't have So there's not that much awareness of it, so there isn't as much research into what the benefits are, which then makes it a bit harder to sell for governments, for example, because they're like, well, where's the evidence that it's going to save us money? And so it's kind of this toxic cycle in a way where everyone who's been involved in rehabilitation can speak at their anecdotal level for the benefits of it on so many levels, but we'd still need way more research to be able to make those economic arguments in a way that is compelling for governments, for healthcare institutions, etc. So I think we're really at a point where interest in dementia rehabilitation is actually growing quite fast. ADI was extremely and pleasantly surprised by the amount of interest the report received even before it was published. People were saying, like, yes, this is something that's definitely that we're not talking about enough. But yes, the tide needs to turn on that end. Again, we're being diagnosed younger, we are living longer. We know that dementia is an issue that's only going to become more and more important, and we need to be prepared. But yeah, I think there is some evidence, like I said, of delaying entry into institutionalized care that we think is really relevant. But we also need more studies, bigger studies, to keep proving that.
Yeah, and I guess it's always that difficult one, isn't it? That you've got a hunch, you know it works, but you've got to find a bit of paper to prove it. I remember, when I was managing activity groups for people living with dementia, my rationale with how this works is everybody went home with a smile on their face. But obviously, you can't put that in front of a team of accountants. But I think one thing, congratulations to ADI for actually raising the subject to start with, because when I saw the report come out, I thought, well, I'd never thought about that, and then gone more into the report and thought, well, this makes absolute 100% perfect sense. And there's a bit in the report that says rehabilitation is a health service, and I think if it is seen as a health service, it then gets absorbed into the mainstream.
Absolutely, and I think it should be something that is better integrated at every level. Oftentimes your GP is the entry point, right? And if your regular doctor doesn't know about rehabilitation, how are most people going to find out about it? I really hope that this concept really enters the mainstream of dementia care. And I know that the authors, Linda and Yoon-hee, have really dedicated their careers to this topic, and it was generally wonderful to be able to work on a report like this, which does treat very complex academic health research topics, but with people who really poured their heart into it. And I think you can hopefully tell that the people who have contributed essays to this are people who have spent a lot of time in their professional and personal lives, because they really do believe that it works, and they do believe that more people should have access to that type of support.
And I think that, the other joy of it is that you've got a lot of eminent people making brilliant points, but at the end of the day, it has to be readable or else nobody's going to read it. And I think the world is probably too full of long, complicated documents that no one reaches beyond page five. Whereas I can honestly say, and this goes for previous reports, whenever I see an ADI report, I think, oh, yeah, oh, that's really interesting. And I don't know, it almost reads like a book. It reads very well, gives examples, and it's interesting. And I think a lot of people take it for granted when you're providing a report. Obviously, a lot of work goes in to just making it readable.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot to me. Before joining ADI, I was a journalist, and so I think I work with the authors of these reports, and I think definitely something that ADI has been thinking a lot about is we don't just want a very stuffy publication that's several hundred pages that is just going to that no one can use or consume. So we always try to think who's the audience for this and how can we reach them? And I think so much of it is we need to make information accessible to people. There's so much misinformation around dementia. So many magic cures or secret, eat this berry and you're guaranteed you will never develop the condition. And there's so much disinformation out there. And I think a key part of it is also making evidence-based information easy to understand and easy to access. And that's really what we try to do. So we have this report, but we also made sure we have some infographics that are also available on our websites that kind of help distill some of the main concepts of this report that we hope can be used by people elsewhere. Like that would really be the dream to help spread those ideas both in like very easy to understand and consume visuals, and also if people then want to delve a bit more in specific aspects of it, they can read the whole report or they can read certain chapters or specific essays and hopefully find something that will resonate with them.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, it certainly, it succeeds in that. And I guess when you're looking at persuading governments and officials, there's a long line of people. The particular official's probably got 10 minutes. And so if you can go in there with a good infographic and say, look, this is the real issue, but as you've just said, if you want to know more, then read it in that. I think that's a really good approach.
Well, thank you.
You know, one of the things also, I mean, what it said, I think it was in the first section. There was a little bit about the importance of being able to think outside the box and not being stuck to all the things. You know, if you've done always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got, sort of thing. And I think that's undervalued in dementia care, thinking outside the box.
Yes, absolutely. And again, it ties to the individual, what's meaningful for people, what resonates with them. And I think that has to be key, and I'm sure in all of healthcare, but I think especially with dementia, obviously, taking into account each form of dementia, right, might have expressed itself differently. You need to adapt to that, but also who the person is, what has mattered to them in their life. Or, some people, like music has always is going to be the thing that reaches them. And I believe it is in India, if I'm not wrong, where some people would actually come up with songs kind of following the tune of old Bollywood songs perhaps, but then have people's like contact information, for example, and they would help people with dementia could then like remember if they got lost in the street, could remember different information. And I think I don't know if that would necessarily count as a rehabilitation, but I know that's
Well,
tapping into the parts of your brain that are st still that function to be able to retain important things and keep moving.
yeah, and I think it is. I think it all adds to the picture, doesn't it? Things like, when I was in Canada, a residential care facility there, and the first thing that met you between the eyes when you went into a room of somebody was 10 things you need to know about me. So therefore, I was born, I like this, I don't like that, or whatever. And going back to what we were saying earlier in the conversation, simple, low cost, but very effective.
Absolutely. And that's also why it, rehabilitation is definitely a healthcare approach, but it's also it has to involve the support system of the individual, people who really understand what matters to that person. And there's been a lot of discussion in recent years with advances in science around precision medicine, right? You can target based on the individual, but I think one of the ways that we try to frame that we think rehabilitation should be framed is as precision care. You're going to get much better results if you think of what makes sense for this individual. Which isn't to say that, group therapies don't have a place in rehabilitation, but it has to resonate with the individual. So for some of them, they might want to go to some physiotherapy classes to make sure that they can maintain their balance so they feel more confident doing activities that they want to do. And so that could be gardening, it could be, going for a walk. The reasons why you might end up doing these things are very specific to the individual, but then, can be integrated into then kind of other interventions with other people. But the core of it, the personalization, the have goals, I think maintaining the motivational aspect, the person, it has to be something that that person wants to do, and it really gives them a sense of purpose. Like that's really crucial.
And I guess, that almost brings us full circle around to the bit of the beginning. But if you're telling people right at the beginning, you can still do this, you can still do that. And, my friend Phyllis, she still drives. When we were in Canada, she said, well, follow me. So I'm following Phyllis to where I need to go. I would have been completely lost without her because, I wouldn't have known where I was at all. But I came back to this country actually, and before we close this full story about that, I said that to members of my family, and I got the response from one of them, but she's got dementia. She still drives. I said, yeah, of course she does. And I think You know, we need more of that, what you can do and what you can contribute, which, you know, the answer is a lot.
Yeah. And last, our previous World Alzheimer report last year was on attitudes to dementia. And we did a follow-up survey from 2019, got, you know, tens of thousands of answers from around the world. And it was quite a sobering realization to realize like there still are still a lot of misconceptions and still a lot of stigma around dementia. And I've done quite a few, I've helped produce quite a few of these reports at this point, but it really feels so much of the time we end up going back to that issue of stigma, and that really affects so much. But as we know, more and more of us, we're going to live older, more and more people are going to get diagnosed that maybe previously wouldn't have been diagnosed. And at least in my personal experience, I feel most people know someone who has been affected by the condition. And it's really such a shame that these attitudes are getting in the way of making things better for everyone. I think no one's out here denying that dementia isn't a difficult condition to live with. I think we all know that. But a big part of it would be if there weren't so many taboos or fear around it, that would already do a world of difference in being able to face things head on and then have more resources or have people not be scared to access resources because they have all this internalized stigma. So I think that often ends up being the thing we come back to, and that ends up being a huge barrier to approaching things differently. And yeah, we have to fight on all fronts in that case.
Yeah, sure. But I do think producing the information you're producing in the manner that you're doing it is really helping. And it does take a lot of the mystique out, and it also shows a very sensible forward approach. You know, I spoke back to my father, who's an old Londoner. He lived in London all his life, and he lived his life by saying we need to show a bit of common, which is common sense. And I look at the stuff that you produce, I look at that report and think, well, yeah, Dad would like that, because that really is common sense. And I just want to congratulate you, everybody that's worked on it. I think it's excellent. It's available totally free, and you can download it. And as you say, dip in and dip out as well. So it's a brilliant document.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you so much. And I really hope this encourages people. They can go see it on ADI's website, which is ALZINT.org. And so we have our report in there that's free to access, like all of our resources, because I firmly believe information is power, right? There's so much fear around this, and I think it really does a disservice to everyone who's affected by dementia. And the more you know, the more, at least, like, yeah, it really helps you face things in a more grounded way. And I think you're right. Common sense is a huge part of it, and it doesn't have to be scary or complicated or complex. I think there is that kind of overwhelming feeling around dementia a lot of the time, right? But actually, we can break things down in bite-sized pieces, and you can take it one thing at a time, one day at a time, and end up seeing results bit by bit afterwards.
Chloe, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed my time here.
Thanks to Chloe and everyone who contributed to the 2025 report. Do take a look. It's very readable and introduces a subject that's not really been addressed in the past. ALZINT.org is the place to go to download your free copy. That's all for this week. Thanks to my production assistant, Angela. Next week, I'm going to be finding out about dementia in Tanzania with my guest, Sengu Safik, from the Fight Dementia and Care organisation. So until then, thanks for listening and take care now.